Colombia, para toda la gente bailadora. Esto fue La Hora Chida con su amiga Yuri y la música de barrio que llegó para quedarse. Que tengan una excelente tarde y nos vemos hasta la próxima.
This is WZOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. So much going on, so much going on.
So many things going on in the world.
Babies dying, mothers crying.
Mom's crying.
How much all is one human life worth?
What happened to peace on earth?
We believe everything that they tell us.
They're gonna kill us, we better kill them first.
But I remember a commandment, thou shalt not kill.
How much is that soldier's life worth?
And what happened to peace on earth?
Bewildered herd still believe that everything we've been told from our birth.
Hell, they won't lie to me, not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth?
And what happened to peace on earth?
So I guess it's just two and the other. Before they can do it to you, let's just kill them all and let God sort them out. Is this what God wants us to do?
And the bewildered herd still believe it. Everything we've been told from our birth.
Hell, they won't lie to me. Is a liar's word worth?
What happened to peace on earth?
Don't confuse caring for weakness. Can't put that label on me. The truth is my weapon of mass protection, and I believe truth sets you free.
Bewildered herd still believe that everything we've been told from our birth.
Hell, they won't lie to me, not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth?
And what happened to peace on earth?
Good afternoon. This is the Wilf Radio Show coming to you from 5 till 6 on Wednesday afternoons from WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. My name is Dick Paddock. I'm going to be a partial time host today along with Tana Hartman. And we're going to bring you several items of interest today, one of which is that there was a rally called Respect Our Vote held in Raleigh today. I guess there were, I would have to guess, between 50 and 100 people there on relatively short notice. And we gathered there in order to greet the General Assembly as it returned from its 4th of July, I guess you'd classify it, recess, in which the Republicans managed to schedule so that they could actually hold a fundraiser, which is not normally permitted by the rules, but the Republicans managed to do that so that they could get a fundraiser in over the holiday, and it was in fact held in the legislature, as I understand it, for what that's worth, good or bad. But the point of the rally today was to tell the legislature that we are watching, that we are aware of what the majority is trying to do, and we're going to do what we can to stop it. There have been some good things that happened. There is a voter ID bill that was passed by the legislature, which would require that anyone who wants to vote has to show some sort of government-issued ID. Apparently, at one point, it was that you had to show a rather limited range of things that were acceptable, such as a driver's license or its equivalent ID. But apparently the choices that you can use has been broadened, but still that strikes me as being not what we call voter-friendly. Up until this past year, the things that we have been striving to get done is to improve access to voting by people, making sure, for example, that felons know that once they have satisfied all their obligations to society, they can register again and be able to vote, just like any other citizen. We had extended early voting. They're trying to cut back on that. We had what we call same-day registration, which is you can register and vote at the same time. That has been abolished. And the list goes on and on, unfortunately. One of the things that's going to be most difficult to deal with is the fact that since the Republicans own I don't know that I would say most, but certainly a large majority, they're going to be in charge of redistricting according to the census. And according to people who have studied the map, I haven't seen it, so I don't really know, but people announced at the rally that what's going to happen is that they have very carefully, that is the majority, has very carefully arranged the map so that each of the 24 members of the legislature who are of color will be facing their opposite numbers, so that there will be a maximum of 12 after the 2012 election. I don't know if this is legitimate. It may be that court review will keep that from happening and cause the lines to be redrawn in a more equitable manner, but that's one of the things that we're having to watch, and we have to get out there and face strongly. There was a group on the other side, I guess you would, I suppose they were Republicans, I don't know, but they held a rally at the same time on the other side of the legislature building, and they were of about equal numbers to those who showed up on what we might call our side of the Capitol. And we all wore, we not all, but many of us wore red shirts because the idea being that we're so mad we see red and we want them to know that. My reason for wearing red is that I miss it. I want it back. I was angry when the right stole it.
Stole
the red for the red states, blue states.
Oh, right.
I want my red back. So that was the basic message today. There was one event that was very interesting, and that is that Reverend Dr. William J. Barber spoke, which is not unusual. However, he shortened his remarks so that his daughter could speak. And by the time the next election rolls around, she will be old enough to vote, and she is going to register and vote. And she had a message that she read to us that was very affecting. She doesn't look like she is of an age to vote, but she certainly talks like it. And I'm, for one, I'm glad that she will be voting.
I'm sorry I missed it today.
It was very hot.
Yes.
That part you didn't miss.
I certainly didn't miss. But you told me you learned something else today, something very sad.
Yes, I was about to bring that up, and that is those of us in the community who have supported labor, and in particular the Moncure Plywood Company workers who were on strike, know that Ellen Moore was one of the leaders of the union, international, I don't know, IAW, woodworkers union, and unfortunately, I learned today that on Monday, his son, 35-year-old son, was shot and killed. I don't know of anything. I talked to Lewis Cameron, who was the president of the union at the time, and confirmed that was the case. And he said that arrangements have not yet been made. But that if you wanted to get in touch with Alan, his home phone number is 919-544-1589. And our hearts go out to Alan and his family and to all the workers down there for whom he stood so strong. Thank you.
Thanks, Dick. Yeah, it's tragic. I'd like us to talk a little bit today about some of the budget cuts that are happening. Budget cuts to everything. It's education, health and human services, justice and public safety. Total cuts of nearly $1.5 billion. But these are cuts that don't need to be made. It's misleading to say it's a cuts-only approach, and it is a way of getting rid of, actually disempowering, millions of people by further impoverishing them. We live in an era of tremendous corporate crime. There are some corporations, I hear the argument all the time, but corporations, my little family business is a corporation. Your little family business may be a corporation, but the large multinational corporations that are basically controlling our government, certainly they're controlling our political parties, They are not little family businesses, and they are not contributing much of anything. They don't pay taxes, many or most of them. And there is a huge list of corporate crimes that they inflict, whether it is crimes against the environment, crimes against people. Corporate crime inflicts more damage on society than all street crime combined. Most people get really incensed. They are so worried about somebody breaking into their car or, you know, breaking into their house. But corporate crime creates far more damage and, in fact, is often more violent than all the street crime combined. Whether it's in bodies or injuries or dollars lost, corporate crime and corporate violence wins by a landslide. The FBI estimates, actually this is an old estimate, this is from several years ago, that burglary and robbery cost the nation $3.8 billion a year. The losses from just a handful of major corporate frauds, for instance, Tyco, WorldCom, Enron, Adelphia, swamped those losses combined. Healthcare fraud alone has cost Americans $100 to $400 billion a year. The savings and loan fraud, which was called the biggest white-collar swindle in history, cost us anywhere from $300 to $500 billion. Then you have the lesser frauds, auto repair fraud, $40 billion a year, securities fraud, $15 billion a year, and on down the list. Recite the list of corporate frauds, and people immediately say to you, but you can't compare street crime and corporate crime. Corporate crime's not violent crime. That's not true. Corporate crime is often violent crime. The FBI, again, has estimated that 16,000 Americans are murdered every year. Compare this to the 56,000 Americans who die every year on the job or from occupational diseases like black lung or asbestosis. And the tens of thousands of other Americans who are victim to the silent violence of pollution, contaminated foods, hazardous consumer products, and hospital malpractice. These deaths are often the result of criminal negligence or recklessness, yet they are rarely prosecuted as homicides or criminal violations of federal laws. Corporate criminals are the only criminal class in the United States that have the power to define the laws under which they and we live. It's not the mafia. It's not the gangsters, street thugs, It's the corporate lobby. They have saturated Washington from the White House to Congress to K Street with their money. And out of the other end, they put the money in one end, out the other end come the laws that they dictate. There is a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council. This group basically crafts and hand feeds, spoon feeds to legislators pro-corporate legislation. Anything that will limit liabilities, do away with any penalties and fees, anything that will give corporations a free hand to run over people and the environment.
If I'm not mistaken, that group was responsible for the Papers, Please law, SB 1070, in Arizona.
Yeah, talk a little more about that. Can you say? Yeah.
I don't know too much more about it, but I do know that they actually handed that to the guy who is now facing a recall because of what he did. And I also understand that there are some very heavy-duty businesses in Arizona that have discovered that they really need those workers who are being captured and transshipped out of the country. And so they're putting the arm on the state legislatures in places like Arizona to cut back on a lot of this
deportations
oh. and roundups.
Yes. Well, actually, I was watching a movie last night called Children of Men. And I have to say, in April of this year, I was reading a number of articles that are saying that's where we're headed, you know, living like that, where a handful of corporations basically control the world, and most people, especially immigrants into any countries, are imprisoned and enslaved. It's a very dark future, and it disturbs me tremendously, especially since I have a one-year-old granddaughter. Large corporations feel free. They violate their own rules with impunity. They whatever lip service they pay to community or social responsibility, behind our backs, they violate all the rules. The automobile industry, for instance, over the past 30-plus years, that industry worked its will on Congress to block any legislation that would impose criminal sanctions on knowing and willful violations of the auto safety laws. And today, with few exceptions, if an auto company is caught violating the law, only a civil fine's imposed. Corporate crime is under-prosecuted by a factor of 100. The flip side of that, corporate prosecutors are underfunded by a factor of, say, 100, too. Big companies that are criminally prosecuted represent only the tip of a very large iceberg of corporate wrongdoing. For every company that's convicted of health care fraud, there are hundreds of others who get away with ripping off Medicare and Medicaid, or they face only slap-on-the-wrist fines and civil penalties when they're caught. For every large company convicted of polluting our waterways, there are many others who are not prosecuted because their corporate defense lawyers are able to offer low-level employees or someone to go who'll go to jail in exchange for a promise from the prosecutors not to touch the high-level executives. For every corporation convicted of bribery or giving money directly to a public official in violation of federal law, there are thousands who give money legally through political action committees. And now, in the wake of Citizens United decision in January of last year, money is flowing into campaign coffers. Elections really are now bought and paid for. And now, with the Republicans in office, too, we have this dreadful redistricting that is going to pit the most decent legislators against one another. If I sound angry, it's because I am. I am angry that we have let this happen. We, the people, we are the citizens of the United States, and it is our responsibility to protect ourselves. We have to stop sitting back and waiting for someone else to do it for us. It is time we fought back, and there are ways to do it. One of the ways is to try to abolish corporate constitutional rights. Do you know that now corporations have more constitutional rights than you or I? They have, since 1886, in a series of long list of legal cases, they have managed to inscribe in stone their rights. They are basically considered persons with all of the rights and none of the responsibilities under law, because at the same time they were working judicially, they were working legislatively to limit their liabilities. They are covered under the first, the fourth, the fifth, the 14th amendments, the Commerce Clause, the Contracts Clause. There is no protection of the Constitution that has not been extended more times to corporations than to human beings. And it's time we stopped this. One of the premier groups working on this is called Move to Amend. And you can learn more about them at www.movetoamend.org. Move to Amend is working to amend the Constitution to revoke corporate personhood. And when we do that, we'll then be able to rein in corporations. As it is now, there is no way to stop a corporation. If they want to come in and pollute your water, if they want to do fracking, which has been, there is a lot of scientific evidence showing how dangerous fracking is, and we'll talk about that soon. We're right now preparing something to go on air about fracking. But one of these days, very soon, you could wake up to find that they're drilling for gas in your neighborhood in Central Carolina. And there are tremendous health consequences, negative health consequences. But I don't want to get off on fracking right now. I really want to stick with Move to Amend. We can amend the Constitution. It has been done 27 times. It's not easy to do. We'll face tremendous resistance, but we can do it if enough of us will take responsibility and decide that we are tired of letting corporations and big money dictate the laws and decide our futures. We have lost our health care, our educational system. We have lost our protections under the law. We stand to lose even more. We stand to lose the very air we breathe and water we drink. So I urge you, think about it. Think about what you love most. Whether it is fishing, for instance, boating, your family, gardening, your animals. Whatever it is you love, wouldn't you want to protect them? What would you do to save them? What would you do to save the future for your children and grandchildren? I hope you'd do something. I hope you'd do whatever it takes.
We should take a break now. It's about the right time to stop. And this is Dick Paddock with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom for our weekly radio show. And we have been listening to Tana Hartman discussing corporate personhood and Move to Amend. And she'll be back with us shortly with some more. But in the meantime, we need to recognize our underwriter, which is Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street, a community resource par excellence where they show movies, where they have bumper stickers, where they have off-the-beaten-path magazines and books, and they can order what you don't see on their shelves but you might happen to know about. So stop by Internationalist Bookstore at, as I said, 405 West Franklin Street in downtown Chapel Hill. This is the radio show presented by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, the Triangle Branch. And you can, you can find us on the web at Triangle WILPF, which is Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. It's easier to say WILP, I guess. If you go to trianglewilf.org on the internet, you can find out information about us, the fact that we generally have our monthly meetings from 10 to 12 a.m. on the second Saturday of the month. And we'd be glad to have anybody who wants to stop in at the Friends Meeting House on Raleigh Road. Up near the top, near the Institute of Government, you can find our meeting place, and we've met there for a long time, and we continue to, and we look forward to having you come and join us. You can also go to the Triangle WILF website, and should you happen to be interested in finding an old radio show in the archive, you can find that posted on our website. I think that that pretty much covers it, except to remind you that there is you should be reminded that if you have trouble receiving this radio station, this show, or any other show over the air, because after all, it is only a 100 watt station, which is about three coat hanger lengths of radius. It seems like sometimes. I mean, when I come up Main Street in Carrboro, I can't get this station sometimes. So anyway, you can stream our show or whatever is live on the air through your computer by going to WCOMFM.org, which is the station's website. That's WCOMFM.org. And we are at 103.5 FM. WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. Donna?
And I just want to say something. WCOM is our voice in the community. Where else can ordinary people like me, like Dick, like you out there go and be heard? The corporations, again, corporate media controls 99% of the media outlets, not just in this country, but worldwide. And it's very hard for us to be heard. We hear only what they want us to hear. WCOM is a place where you, if you have a message, you can be heard. But WCOM doesn't have any paid employees. Everyone here is a volunteer, and every cent that's donated goes directly to the station to maintain it. Besides rent and utility bills, there are other costs for internet streaming, for insurance, equipment upkeep, for telephone and music license fees. And there are fees for programs like Free Speech Radio and Democracy Now!, among other things. This station doesn't do tote bags. Don't you have enough of those anyway? Coffee mugs or trips. What you get in return for a contribution is continued access to some great music, some of the best local radio anywhere around, and you get to hear people who have ideas and opinions that don't make it into the mainstream media. WCOM's a nonprofit organization, so all donations are tax deductible. You can go to WCOMFM.org, click on the Donate Now button, and you can make a secure donation. If you put $10 a month, I do this, $10 a month on your credit card, and you're then enrolled as a member in the Less Than a Latte Club, $10 a month. Think about that. How much do you spend on coffee each day? You could do $10 a month. You can write a check for whatever you can afford. It could be $2. Send it to WCOM at 208 East Main Street, Carrboro, 27510. Thanks for your support and for listening.
And if you're interested, you can always volunteer.
That's right.
You can find somebody who has a show that matches your views and volunteer to be on the show. Find the person who's in charge, the quote producer, unquote, of the show, and tell them that you want to be on the show and get on the air. That'll work fine. Be glad to have you with us.
Absolutely. And if you have an issue that you think is really vital to the community and people need to know about it, contact us, and we'll try to get you onto the show. In fact, we can get you in, onto the show to talk about issues. We are interested in vital things, the political, economic, social issues that the community needs to know about. And I'm back now on my soapbox. But I guess my point is that We need to start asking ourselves, which side are we on? And are we going to just let this all wash over us? I know it's hard to imagine that we could face a future that is bleak with a handful of wealthy elites in control and the rest of us struggling just to survive. But that's the road we're headed down if we don't take action. Are we for or against democracy? Because really there's not really any other choice. If you're for democracy, then you as a citizen need to take action. You need to participate in your own governance, in deciding the rules that govern you and your state, your community. Most of the pundits and professionals, especially in places like Washington, D.C., are either paid for, funded by, or under the control of a corporate lobby. Lawyers, young lawyers come to town. They're fresh out of law school. Their starting salary is, in the six figures, and they're working for corporations. It's time to ask again, what side are you on? For any lawyers out there, by the way, young lawyers, if you're considering other options, check out Alan Morrison's book. It's a few years old now. Beyond the Big Firm, Profiles of Lawyers Who Want Something More. Corporations are not about, no matter what they say, their primary objective, in fact, they're legally required to put profits before anything else.
That was an innovation back in the 1920s, by the way. That was not true prior to, I don't know whether it was a law or a Supreme Court decision. But
was it 1922, I think? I don't know.
But I don't know, sometime, but I think 27, but I don't remember for sure. In that neighborhood. And that, of course, we know how that turned out.
Yes. Yes. By the way, did you know that the word democracy appears nowhere in the Constitution? What our Constitution created was a republic that was designed to protect property, not people. And that didn't go over very well with a lot of the ordinary people in the original colonies. And more than half the population back then was opposed to the Constitution because they saw how much power it would take away from them and how much it compromised the democratic ideals of the Declaration of Independence.
For those of you who don't remember, the original category of people who could vote were white males, age 21 and older, with a certain minimum amount of property.
Property. That's right. And today,
of course, could include slaves back in those days.
Oh, yes, indeed. In fact, I want to say something. If you don't know what corporate personhood is, here is an easy way to remember. This was crafted by the husband of a woman named Jan Edwards, who lives in Humboldt County in California. And Jan's been working for years on the issue of corporate personhood. But this very creative device comes from her husband. Slavery is the legal fiction that a person is property. Corporate personhood is the legal fiction that property is a person. Again, slavery is the legal fiction that a person is property. Corporate personhood is the legal fiction that property is a person. The history of the U.S. as if you've really studied history, not what we're taught in most of our high school classes, or earlier than that, certainly not, but even in college, unless you really dig deep, it's hard to get the true story of this country. The history of the U.S. can be told as the story of who is and who is not a person under law. Women, the poor, slaves,
The indigent?
The poor, yes, were not considered people. I'm losing my train of thought, Dick. If you want to jump in, help me. I'm too tired today. Corporations originally were not persons with the rights of law, but again, neither were women slaves or indentured servants or the poor. But to understand the phenomenon of corporate personhood, you have to start by looking at the foundation of U.S. law, the Constitution of the U.S. The document was written by five gentlemen who have been described by one historian as the well-bred, well-fed, well-read, and well-wed. As some of the wealthiest and most privileged people in the new country, they were very aware that their power had everything to do with how much property they owned. The land, crops, buildings, personal goods, and for most of them, property in the form of human beings, slaves. As some of the best educated men in the world, at least by European standards, they also knew a lot about democracy, and they understood what a threat real democracy could represent to their personal power. The kind of pseudo-democracy they prized and wrote about so eloquently could only be practiced like people of property like them. And it was certainly not for the rabble. Many of them wrote and spoke at length about the inability of the common people to be self-governing. So the word democracy, again, appears nowhere in the Constitution.
Neither does corporation.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It's that's a tale for another time. But one of these days we'll tell you how corporations came to be persons under the law. It's an interesting story and involves a long timeline of court cases. The Constitution, in fact, mentions only two entities, we the people and the government. The people are on one side, and we're sovereign and have individual rights. And on the other side is the government, which is accountable to the people and has specific duties to perform to the satisfaction of we the people. We delegate some of our power to the government in order for them to perform tasks that we want them to do. In a representative democracy, the system should work just fine. But the problem is that the phrase, we the people, is not defined in the Constitution. In 1787, in order to be considered one of we the people and to have the rights protected by the Constitution, you had to be an adult male, as Dick said, with white skin and a certain amount of property. The states determined who could vote. Some states had religious restrictions. At the time of the Constitution, we the people was only about 10% of the population. Those who owned property, including slaves, were very clear that this was ruled by the minority, and that's the way they wanted it. In fact, that's the way they want it today. The elites want it that way. It was not that many years ago that I think it was Henry Kissinger, that ignoble war criminal, who said that it was very important that the United States began to think about, protecting elites and ensuring elite control before they lost it. Most people tend to believe that the Constitution, and specifically the Bill of Rights, protects our rights of freedom, speech, religion, and press, the right to assemble peaceably, and so on. And lots of people, even very educated people, say this, but the truth is it does no such thing. What, in fact, it does is it expresses, how to say this, the absence of a negative rather than the presence of a positive. The First Amendment, for example, does not say all citizens are guaranteed the right to free speech. It says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. The First Amendment just restricts the government from specific encroachments. It doesn't guarantee us anything.
And it doesn't say anything about non-governmental entities either.
No. No. This wasn't a concern for people originally because everybody thought they had strong bills of rights, and there were strong bills of rights in state constitutions. At the time, the states had more power than the federal government, so people felt protected. The U.S. Constitution allowed slavery throughout the U.S., but it was each state's constitution that created free or slave states. And over time, the states have lost power to the federal government. Now, that's still a big issue, they say. The thing is, what they're really looking at now is not whether the federal government has power, but whether corporations continue to exert power over both state and federal governments. And they're doing a great job, I have to say. They really are. They're in control. There's no doubt about it. And again, as Dick said, the word corporation doesn't appear in the Constitution either. And the reason for that is that the writers of the Constitution just had no interest in using for-profit corporations to run the government. In those days, corporations were considered to be tools of the king's oppression. I've lost my... I am really tired. I'm sorry, folks. I'm really tired today, and I keep losing my place and my train of thought. Tools of the king's oppression. And they were chartered for the purpose of exploiting the New World and shoveling wealth back into Europe. Does this sound familiar? That's what colonialism is, by the way.
Yeah, the British East India Company was the prime example that against which the Boston Tea Party was mounted.
That's right. The Boston Tea Party was not against a tax on tea, it was against the British East India Company's monopoly on tea. And that's another little history lesson. You know, I'll bring in one of these days, there's a short little quiz that I'll bring in, history quiz. The rich in those days formed what were called joint stock corporations to distribute the risk of colonizing the Americas. And they gave them names like the Hudson Bay Company, British East India Company, the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Because they were so far from the king, the agents for the corporations had a lot of autonomy. They could pass their own laws, levy taxes, and even raise armies to manage and control their property and commerce. And they were not popular with the colonists. So the writers of the Constitution left control of corporations to the state legislatures, and this is in the 10th Amendment, I think, where they could get the closest supervision by the people. Early corporate charters were explicit about what a corporation could do, how and for how long and with whom and where and when. Corporations were closely monitored and governed. They couldn't own stock in other corporations. They were prohibited from any part in political process. Individual stockholders were held personally liable for any harms that were done in the name of the corporation. And most charters lasted for only 10 or 15 years. But most importantly, in order to receive the profit-making privileges the shareholders in the corporation sought, their corporations had to represent a clear benefit for the public good, such as building a road, a canal, or a bridge. And when corporations violated any of the terms of their charters, the charters were frequently revoked by the state legislatures. This is nothing like corporations today. What has happened in the last two centuries is important, but it happened so quickly, so slowly and so subtly outside of the public purview that, we didn't even know what was happening.
So often it was done by the courts, particularly the Supreme Court. They just kind of oozed it by us.
Yes, yeah.
You have the five men in black robes, and they were almost exclusively men until very recently, of course. White men, to be precise.
Again, yes.
Old white men.
Rich white men. During and after the Civil War, there was a really fast increase in the number and size of corporations. And that form of business started to become a really important way of holding and protecting property and power. And increasingly, through corporations, the wealthy started influencing legislators. They were bribing public officials, employing lawyers to write new laws and file court cases. They challenged existing laws that restricted their behavior. And little by little, decade after decade, state legislatures increased corporate charter length while they decreased corporate liability and reduced citizen authority over the corporate structure, over governance, production, charter, and labor. So the limited liability corporation, that's where it originated. But minority rulers were only going to be able to go just so far with that strategy because corporations are a creation of the government. They are, again, a legal fiction, a legal entity, a legal construct. So they still fell on the side, on the government side of the constitutional line, and they had duties accountable to the people. And if minority rule by property was going to be accomplished through corporations, they had to achieve rights instead, which required them to become persons under the law. And their tool to do this was the 14th Amendment, which was ratified in 1868. From then on, it took the ruling class less than 20 years to shift corporations from the duty side of the line, where they were accountable to the people, to the right side, where they got protection from government. The 14th Amendment, in addition to saying that now all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. are citizens, says that no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person the equal protection of the laws. The phrase about not depriving any person of life, liberty, or property without due process is exactly the same wording as the 5th Amendment, which protects people from that kind of abuse by the federal government. And now with the 14th Amendment, states couldn't abuse people in that way. These are important rights, and they're written in a short, straightforward manner. And after the Civil War and all the agony over slavery, the people in the states that ratified the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were clear that they wanted to right the wrongs of slavery. But that did not stop the railroad barons and their attorneys in the 1870s and 80s. Those who wanted to maintain minority rule were losing their grip, they were afraid, and there was a real danger in those days of democracy creeping into the body politic. Until the Civil War, slavery was essential to maintaining the entire economic system that kept wealth and power in the hands of the few. And that's not just in the South, but in the North, too. It was the legalization of a lie that one human being can own one another. And slavery was at the core of the whole system of oppression that benefited the few. The watershed moment came in 1886 when the Supreme Court ruled on a case called Santa Clara County v. Southern Pacific Railroad, and the case was not about corporate personhood. Santa Clara, like many railroad cases, was about taxes, but before the court delivered its decision, the following statement was delivered by Justice Waite, Chief Justice Raymond Waite. You should research him. It's interesting. There's a new play out about him. The court does not wish to hear argument on the question of whether the provision in the 14th Amendment, which forbids a state to deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws, applies to these corporations. We are all of the opinion that it does. The statement appeared in the header of the case in the published version, and the court made its ruling on other grounds. So how the statement appeared in the header of the case is a matter of some mystery, but it is being worked on and solved. It was written in by a clerk, it turns out.
Who was a retired officer of a railroad company.
That's right. And so he sort of took it upon himself. But this, in fact, has set the precedent for a long list of abuses. And I think I'm going to let it ride there. We'll talk about this, continue to talk about this, because this is a big issue, and it's not going anywhere and until we, the people, understand it and realize that corporations control more than the federal government, or we do, and that we are all in danger. We we need to keep learning. And the best things we can do is now get ourselves informed and active. And I hope you'll do that. So again, go to the site Move to Amend. And it's a site that is working with people. There are more than 113,000 individuals that belong to this organization and hundreds of organizations and groups. And they're doing some really remarkable work around the country. It is to end corporate rule, to legalize democracy. MoveToAmend.org. Thanks, and join us again next week. I'm going to let Dick wrap up.
Yes, this has been the Wilf Radio Show, what we sometimes call the wake-up call, even though it's not normally people's wake-up time. But we do want you to wake up and get with the program.
Do we have enough time to do that?
Okay. Here's things that are going on that Tana has handed me about ways that our democracy is being restricted by the new state legislature. Here are example things that are going on. Require voters to show a government-issued photo ID when they vote. End Sunday voting. Reduce the days and hours in the early voting period, even though 60% of all North Carolina voters used this option in 2008, or maybe because over 60% of the NC voters used this option in 2008, because we know what happened in 2008, right? Next, stop voters from registering during early voted by eliminating same-day registration. Stop pre-registration for teenagers, even though 37,500 future voters used the program in 2010. End the NC Public Campaign Fund that gives voters more diversity in their choice for top judges and provides statewide judicial candidates a way to run without accepting big donations from special interests. I understand that there is a move afoot, in fact, to make judicial elections partisan. I'm not sure about that, but you might want to keep your eye out for that, because doesn't seem like it would take much more down that road to make things really bad.
Yes. No, it's not going to take much at all, in fact.
Right. Okay, so this is the Wilf Wake Up Call program. We encourage you to go to triangle.wilpf.org get information about Wilf and visit our underwriters website, which I may have forgotten to mention, which is internationalistbooks.org. As it spells out one word, internationalistbooks.org. Thank you all for tuning in this evening.
Come all of you good workers, this news to you I'll tell. The rights we take for granted now, we have no right to sell. Does anyone remember the days with bold John L? It's thanks to him no child of mine will know the breaker's hell. Tell me, which side are you on?
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 Which side?
Do you know how it happened? From the world of suits and ties, they preach cooperation. Don't listen to their